in the 1950s, when we wanted to see a black man be able to beat up a white man and get out of the ring with it, we watched Sugar Ray Robinson. That image, I think, was the essence of the tenacity, the challenge, the audacity of struggle against the odds that Detroiters never have given up on Detroit and the possibilities that exist.
Detroit was never one of the intellectual centers of the movement. Those intellectual centers of the movement mainly came from the East Coast and West Coast. But here in Detroit, we've been finding our way to carry out this fight in a practical manner. You know, with not a lot of talk, not a lot of press, and not trying to make heroes out of people, but trying to be victorious.
Detroit is a movement city. Every time we have a crisis, we see it as an opportunity. And I think I'd like you to take that back to your cities, that a crisis is an opportunity for you to create something new and something different. We don't just resist, we create something new.
Last month, over 25,000 people, among them community organizers, union members, spiritual guides, elders, youth, culture shapers, and revolutionaries, came together in Detroit, Michigan, for the second ever United States Social Forum. You just heard the voices of Detroit Movement elders Ron Scott, General Baker, and Grace Lee Boggs. Tonight on Circle A Radio, you'll hear interviews from the U.S. Social Forum featuring voices of resistance against J.P. Morgan Chase, and you'll learn more about a process central to building a national agenda from the grassroots. This process is called a PMA, or People's Movement Assembly, and over 50 took place at the U.S. Social Forum in Detroit. Stay tuned for Circle A Radio here on KBOO 90.7 in Portland or KBOO.fm on the web. Circle A Radio caught up with East Coast ally Sophia Bryant from Picture the Homeless at the U.S. Social Forum outside of Cobo Hall in Detroit.
Hi, my name is Sophia Bryant. I'm a member of Picture the Homeless. I'm an organizer, leader in the housing campaign, as well as the media team.
Great. So tell us about what Picture the Homeless does.
Picture the Homeless is an organization that was founded and led by homeless people. We have homeless and formerly homeless people. We work on shelter, homeless, street homeless issues. We also work on affordable housing and also abandoned buildings and empty spaces, because you have warehouse homes and buildings and warehouse people in the shelter. So why not put the two together? If you can spend $750 million per year to shelter people, plus they get a surplus of another $60,000. So that's what, a billion? Okay, we can cut that in half. We have a plan, and we just need them to listen to us. They're talking about that, you know, they don't have money. You know why they don't have money? Because they're throwing away, they're flushing it down the toilet. You know, when they put you in a shelter, you're in a little box, and they pay anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000 to shelter you there. I mean, wouldn't it make more sense to spend half of that and put me in an affordable apartment, a permanent affordable apartment? It makes more sense, right? So you look at them and you wonder, these are supposed to be intelligent people making these policies, but they're making policies for people that they don't relate to, first of all. That's the number one problem. But we need to get to the roots of homelessness, okay? If they would try to get to the root of that and listen to the people who are the experts. We are the experts, the people who have went through it. You know, we know exactly what it is, what we need. You know, we don't want anything free. We don't want the government to do any, you know, we can do things for ourselves, but we just need a little hand up, not a hand out, okay? So we would love to work on the building that we live in. Okay, we'd like to restore these buildings. There's ways we can put these buildings back online. Homeless people come from every walk of life. It's just amazing the people that I've met. And there's all kinds of reasons why people become homeless. It could be due to death of a spouse, the head of the household. It could be a fire, you know, a disability. I mean, the list goes on and on. When I was exiting the shelter, a policeman was entering. Yeah, because, you know, they're raising the rent so high in New York that you can't afford to live there anymore. And it's really gentrification. They're trying to take over certain communities, and they're displacing people, and they don't care where they go. And their only alternative, because of the fact that they're low income, they're elderly, they're disabled, like me, I'm a disabled nurse. I mean, I've never been homeless before, and this is quite a journey and an experience. And it made me become a real activist and a revolutionary. And I'm going to stay with the fight. I'm going to struggle as long as, you know, I have breath. And another thing that we're doing about the abandoned buildings, we're tired of these people warehousing these buildings and holding them for years and years. There's buildings that have been sitting empty for 20 years or more. So we've researched all of that. We have drafted a bill. It's in front of New York City Council. And half of the council so far has signed on. And what it is that we want to make people who hold empty spaces and empty buildings accountable. We want to know why they're empty. What are you doing with them and stop this from happening? You have empty buildings and you have people that are in need. Put them together. Okay? Come on. It's just simple. You know, it's not rocket science. So we're just like a little bit fed up because nobody listens. Every time you try to engage with them, it's like, you know, they're smiling in your face and they're telling you all this stuff, but nobody's going to do anything. Direct action is always necessary to make change, and that's what we're all about. And that's why we're here, because people here are doing the same thing, and we're getting ideas, and we're making connections and networking, and it's so wonderful. I'm so excited to be here. It's my first U.S. Forum, and I hope to go on to the International in Senegal next year.
So tell me a little bit about some of the direct actions. I noticed Picture the Homeless has taken over a number of buildings and lots, and you have some specific targets when you do that. Can you talk about that?
Well, right now, our main campaign is J.P. Morgan Chase, who got a big bailout, but none of us got a bailout, okay? So we took over a property owned by them on 115th Street between Madison and 5th last year in New York City, and we did it under the disguise of a photo shoot. We had a professional model and a photo shoot going on the sidewalk, and the police were coming by, and they were actually helping us, not knowing. They were telling people, oh, move your cars. No, they thought they had a permit, right? So as that was going on, we were rolling back the fence. We took the fence down and just rolled it back, and we put up a stage. We had music. We had food. It was so festive, but we were giving out literature. We were bringing in the neighborhood, educating people, letting them know what's going on, raising their consciousness. Everybody had a great time. So then finally the police come, and they realize, right, they bring all these police. They even bring the head man from Police Plaza, but they all know us. They know what we're doing. We're trying to do good things for the community. And the captain said that, but he's wearing two hats. He's a person, a human being who understands, but he's also got to do his job. Okay, so we had two reverends and my director, 10 people all together, right, who like resisting. The rest of us said, okay, we're going to stand back. They said, you have to leave the property, right? But the first thing is, we asked for an affidavit from J.P. Morgan. We're not leaving until we get that. So they pretend they had it, but they wouldn't let us see us. Finally, we had to get our councilwoman, Melissa Mark Viverito, who she's really pushing for this, because in her area, East Harlem, El Barrio, you have the majority of abandoned buildings are in her district. So she's really pushing for this, right? So then they say, okay, we have it now, because she insisted. So they showed it to us. Then they said, all right, anybody that doesn't want to be arrested, you have to get on the sidewalk. So 10 of them stay because we want to make a point. The rest of us were like cheering them on. I mean, it was like magnificent. And the whole street was lined up with police. And the police really felt bad because they know what we were doing was right. And then they didn't even want to arrest the reverends. It was just so funny, right, the way they were treating their, you know, kid gloves, right? So they put them in the van, and the news is there, and they're filming everything, right? So we also had embedded with us from the beginning a New York Times reporter. So he's like putting it on, you know, he's putting it on the internet, and he's sending it to his paper, so people are getting updates all through the day what was going on if they weren't there. It was just amazing, right? All right, so they go to jail. The police were so nice in jail, they weren't even there long, and they were like giving them menus. What do you guys want to eat? Are you hungry? It was crazy, right? So now they get tickets, they get out of jail, they go to court. J.P. Morgan didn't even want to do anything. First, it was criminal trespassing, right? We called them the Tent City 10 because we also put up tents, solidarity for the homeless. And if anybody homeless want to come in and lay down, come on, you know, and come have food and everything. It was wild. We had the best time. And so we held it down for about 8 hours. We were hoping to hold it down for the whole weekend, but it worked out. It was good. So what we've been doing since is, on Malcolm X's birthday, we dropped banners from a building in the Bronx, one in Brooklyn, and one in Manhattan. In the areas we know that are being targeted, right? We had some wonderful signs up, right? Target and Bloomberg because he never wants to meet with us. He even said that he would, and he gave us a date. And, you know, actually the day before, he reneged. He doesn't want to hear it, okay? So now we had same kind of festive atmosphere at the building, kind of took that over. Then we marched down J.P. Morgan Chase Bank, right, and did a demonstration in front of that bank. The bank closed down an hour and a half early, unprecedented. And now we also, but we've had a campaign all the while saying, asking people, and it's on the internet, go to our website, asking people to sign on that if you have an account with Chase, please, we want divestment. Take your money, withdraw it, okay? I don't care who you are. And we have people backing us, like organizations, churches, and individuals, corporations. They're taking their money out. They've signed on. So it's looking good. We're getting there. I mean, you know, you have to take small steps to do it, but it's worth it. A lot of hard work, but it's worth it.
That's beautiful. And you have, your organization has been around for about a decade.
Yeah, 10 years. We just had our 10-year anniversary in November, and we had a big gala. It was wonderful. It was really, I mean, it was very moving, you know. And at first, I don't know if you know how it first started, with two men who were in Bellevue Shelter, New York City, and they were sitting there saying, you know, this really sucks, and somebody should do something about it. Then they looked at each other and said, why not us? And that's how it started. Well, one of our founders had passed away, and he wound up in Pottersville in New York because he had no identification, so that wound up being a campaign for us because we want to make sure that you know, people are buried there. You know, before you bury them there, we want them to be identified. And the process, it takes so long. But we know that there's ways they can do it quickly. And people don't have to be buried, you know, in a mass grave. And plus, if you are there, your family wasn't allowed to go on there because it's the correctional system runs it. And nobody was allowed to go over. It's a little island, right? And so we were the first people to be able to step onto that land and have memorial services. Every other month, we'd have a different faith leader, and you know they would say a prayer and have a nice service there. So we're making progress. Now we're pushing to have it every month, and then every other week, and maybe every week, okay? We have so many campaigns going on. It's like crazy. It really is.
So if people want to find out more about those campaigns, there's lots of media on Picture the Homeless on YouTube, and you have a great website.
Oh, yeah. We have a great media team. Everything we do, we film it. We make actual films that we can use as teaching tools. I've done that at the UN Plaza. People come in from different states who have the same type of situation. I mean, this is everywhere. I mean, it's not just in one place. Everywhere, it's same thing, different state. Okay, so we use those films as teaching tools for, you know, groups like that, as well as for new members. And we put everything up on YouTube, and that's the wonderful thing. We can, like, wherever we are, we can just put it on, and people know what we're doing immediately. And Facebook, Twitter, just go to www.picturethehomeless.org. We also have a blog too, but you'll see a lot of video, you'll get a lot of information, and you'll get updates on everything we're doing. Like, this is going to be on there, believe me. I think it's already on now. Yeah. I have to check. I think they sent stuff back already to the office, yeah. So.
Is there anything else you want to add, Sophia? Any visions for the people? You've laid it down really well, but something we missed?
I just want to say to everybody, keep in the struggle. It's worth it. It's hard work, but you know what? Nothing comes easy. And we need to turn this pyramid that's always on the money upside down, because we put these people in power, but our constitution is for the people, by the people. So we got to change it, because it's not like that anymore. We got to turn the pyramid upside down and make them understand and make them move. Yeah, so, you know, we really got to keep doing it. This is the only way they're going to listen, okay? And when they see crowds like this, I mean, our organization started off little, and then we're going around, you know, trying to engage people, and started doing actions because nobody was listening to us. But then we started, you know, hooking up with other people that we saw that were doing the same things, working on the same thing, and put everybody under this umbrella. So we have this coalition as well, all right? And we have the interfaith community behind us. I mean, so it's just gotten bigger and bigger, and everybody's in agreement, and we're all working together. So when we do action, all these people come. When they do something, we come. So we support each other. Now we're making connections with people across the country as well as across the world, because we also do this You heard about the Shack Dwellers, right? And the new movie, Dear Mandela. These people are homes which they built themselves, shacks, being bulldozed at gunpoint, have to get out of their house. And what they're doing is, you know, like any city that has homeless, when something big comes, they get rid of you. So, I mean, it's an awful situation. People have been killed and jailed for no reason. So if you go to, just go to YouTube and look for the movie, Dear Mandela, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. So we support them. We've been down to the embassy doing actions. That's all there. You just look on our website. Okay. So we get updates all the time what's going on over there. I get emails, like, constantly. So I know everything is, all of us, you know. So it's great. And we really thought, well, they were trying to actually disrupt the cup. But then they changed their mind because, you know, the police are so they're so aggressive and they're so corrupt over there that they changed their mind. But they're trying to, but they're still mobilizing. And the young people, you're gonna see it in the film. The young people are doing their thing. I mean, they're really raising the consciousness of the young because they're looking forward towards the future. You know, these are the people, and these are people that are gonna have to lead. And they feel that Mandela has let them down. You know. Go to the movie. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about. We met them in person. They're really great people. So we support them. I'm on WBAI. I'm sure when I get back, they're going to want to have us on, you know, because they know we're always in something. And they support us, you know. That's our local station that's really progressive. And they're, you know, social justice, you know, minded. So, yeah.
Well, keep in touch with us and keep us up to date on Picture the Homeless.
Definitely. I love you guys. You guys are awesome. Oh, my goodness.
That was Sophia Bryant of Picture the Homeless, New York City. And you're listening to Circle A Radio on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. Tonight you're hearing voices from the United States Social Forum, which took place in Detroit last month. On June 25th, hundreds of Native Detroiters and U.S. Social Forum allies from all over the country and the world took to the streets with the resounding cry, "Bail out the people, not the banks." Here are some of the folks we met.
Well, my name is Bevelin. I don't right now think they're going to get much done because Chase is a big bank. Chase has crossed the whole United States of America. It's going to take many more people than this in every city to even affect Chase. They're not having any effect on Chase.
What if I told you that people in cities across the country have been organizing against Chase? Does that feel like something that might be more effective?
It does, but you know, you really got to fight against this bank, and this is one of the largest banks in America.
Yeah, they're one of the top three that are foreclosing on people. Now, are you from Detroit?
Yes, I'm from Detroit. I lived in New York a long time. I worked for, well, it was First National City Bank, and it's called Citibank now. I worked for them at 111 Wall Street.
Also one of the top three that's foreclosing on people. So tell me just what you've seen in your time living in Detroit as far as what's happening with the city.
It's really pathetic because if you go into the inner city of Detroit, every house, just the houses are burnt out. They're being disassembled. They're just not any good, you know. Their house. What did they get? The police. Well, as long as they don't get dangerous. But the houses are in bad shape. I mean, there are no houses. And what they're tearing down the houses. The houses are broke down. The windows, the doors, everything is taken off. Who's doing it?
Are they stripping out like metals and things?
Yeah,
like
they're stripping the houses, and I'm beginning to think maybe the banks are behind that. You know what I mean? They're getting them to strip all the houses because they're foreclosing on them and all that. So they're getting something because they know they're gonna burn them out. You know?
Somebody told me yesterday that they believe that the banks are just waiting for everybody to leave the city so they can tear it down and rebuild it for more expensive condos. It was actually a security guard on a bus told us that.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. They're doing that probably, but I don't think they'll be very successful.
Do you think it's important for the rest of the United States to know what's happening in Detroit?
Of course. Not only, but it's not only happening here, it's happening everywhere. You know what I mean? it's not just here, it's in other cities too. Even though the paper tried to tell you that Detroit is the baddest, it's not. They're all bad. It's, many houses are torn down. Many houses are burned down. Many houses are stripped. All of it. In more cities than Detroit.
Now, do you have hope for the future and, you know, for these generations that are growing up without the kind of prosperity that some people had access to in the past?
You know, let me say that you never know what tomorrow's going to bring. Just because we're having a bad time now doesn't mean it's going to be. In 1960, they had a bad time. 1960s, they had a bad time. 1970s, it were good. I mean, you know, how can you say? You can't just pinpoint Detroit. There's Chicago, there's Newark, there's a lot of different places. There's Kentucky, someplace in Kentucky. I heard it the other day on the news. Really, it's America. America is suffering, period.
My name is Ray C. Johnson. I'm in support of certainly the whole one mission, one world, one people. And certainly as it relates to demonstrating and expressing our concerns, not only in terms about the structural issues of our economic system, but certainly those of corporate greed who have raped and pillaged us economically and for their own self-interest.
Are you from Detroit?
I live in Detroit, own a business in Detroit. Went to school in Detroit, went to Michigan State University, and I continue to give back in Detroit. Detroit is the epicenter of all of the levels of greed that we have seen that is not only local but global. And I'm here to voice my dissent, and I'm synonymous with, just as we've indicated, that a people united can never be defeated. It is a protracted struggle that will go on, but victory is at hand and victory is here. This is a victory, as a matter of fact, on these steps. And of course, there have been some movement in terms of some legislation to try to rein in some of the outlandish kind of measures that have been taken by banks. Not enough, certainly, because they are part of the organized crime.
How long have you been organizing for justice in the United States?
Actually, for a long time. As a youngster, I was involved with Dr. King's organization. At one time, I was executive director of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Michigan chapter. At age, I was the youngest executive director, probably at that time I was like 24. So I've been an activist in places like Vista Rica, Georgia, Addison, Alabama, Dakar, Senegal. So I've been a long time. It's in my blood. It was in my parents' blood. It was during the days of the anti-war in Vietnam. I was a draft resister. So I've been an activist probably since I was born.
So how do you feel about the younger generation and what they are inheriting at this point?
Well, certainly it's a tragedy, and I think, though, that gives me certainly hope has been the fact that we have a lot of young folk who are recognizing the shallowness of a system that only seeks to get more, only recognizes and increasing the speed, and then utilizing the world's resources as if there's no tomorrow. And I think there are a lot of young folk who are recognizing this and are continuing to take a look at some internal values, living from the inside out and not the outside in, and who are no longer buying the hype, no longer buying the propaganda, and recognize what true living is all about, and also the possibilities of our humanity, to embrace everyone's humanity. So I'm optimistic about that. I just want to see even more of our young folks involved. What we have left them is the legacy of overburdened death. What we have left them is a value system that certainly is focused only on loving things and using people instead of loving people and using things.
Are you taking part in some of the People's Movement assemblies at the U.S. Social Forum?
Yes, I have. I've had an opportunity to sit in on some of those. My office is right downtown, and I like to think of myself as a businessman with a social conscience. and find ways to support this movement. So yes, I've sent in on sessions, talked to people. I think I'm more excited about, and many of the things I've set in on and whatever have been informative. But I think I'm enjoying the fact of having conversations like this and meeting people and having like minds and spirits and the sense of openness and acceptance from a global perspective. Met a young lady from Belgium and all over, from Salvador. And I think being here in Detroit, which is an international and global city, where we can, where out of my living room I look at another country, I think that this is consistent with really what this movement is all about. Out of this movement, of course, it was Dr. King who delivered his first I Have a Dream speech before he went to Washington, D.C., and we had 100,000 to walk down Woodward. So we have a legacy in the union movement. We have a legacy in the Underground Railroad that we just three blocks from here is the point where Frederick Douglass met John Brown when he came here. So it's just a huge legacy. Ralph Bunche, who was, of course, a native Detroiter, who also the works he did at the United Nations, Thurgood Marshall and his historic works. So Detroit is the center of a movement, and I'm excited that they're here. I've attended some of the sessions, but the greatest sessions have been meeting the people, listening to critical and analytical discussions, and also feeling their sense of power, purpose, and passion. We're continuing to evolve to our yet unevolved state, but it requires us to continue to move forward. And part of me recognizing my elders and our ancestors, as part of me honoring them, then I must move forward this agenda for all humanity. To do anything less than that is to truly to denigrate our history and sacrifice our legacy and our future. So now is the time for all of us. And I encourage everyone, you know, to really activate their plans, programs, and activities, you know, for all of humanity. This is at the core of all significant spiritual revivals, all significant religions as it relates to what their real essence is. And that is about embracing our humanity and uplifting all of us. Because when the least of us is down, all of us are down. And when we raise, as they've often said, you know, you raise the tides, all boats are going to float. And that's what we're about. And we have to do that. We have to resist and know that through that resistance, that we really are on the right side of history. We're on the right side of history. There were those years ago who fought against all kinds of tyranny, and there were those who said that is of little use and no hope. And yet women can vote. And yet we're here today, and yet we have pushed this agenda. So we can overcome this. Because I believe that we are continuing to become one with our ideal and with people like yourselves and this energy here. And at the heart of that is love, which is the most powerful force in the universe. It cannot go away. It cannot be diminished. It cannot be destroyed any more than you can kill God. You can't kill the movement.
Bail out the people! Bail out the people!
Not the banks!
Bail out the people!
Not the banks!
My name is Frances Dostal, and I'm here today because it's a demonstration against the banks, including J.P. Morgan, whose name is on all these at any rate, I'm against the system that the banksters have charge of, which is capitalism. And I've been doing that for my whole life, really.
Okay, and so give us some perspective how long you've been working against the system of capitalism.
The first chant that I remember chanting at a May Day parade in 1934 was "Hands off Tom Mooney and the Scottsboro Boys." And that was, Tom Mooney was a union organizer, and the Scottsboro Boys were a group of Alabama young people who were charged with raping a white woman, the old standby. And the following year, the next chant I remember is Hands Off Ethiopia, which was in 1935, fascist Italy invaded the African country of Ethiopia. So I have a long and some would say dishonorable history.
I'm humbled to be in your presence, actually. So tell me, you know, with that long history, what is your vision for the future when you see this, after you've seen cycles and cycles of people rising up and...
In fact, the only way we got Social Security was because our parents did the rising up. And they may have started out as pacifists, but it was the strength of the mass struggle. And when the police are not pacifists, we're not pacifists in return, although we get shot in the back, which means we're escaping from the police. But all the advances that people have made, including the 8-hour day and Social Security, Medicare, which we are all the beneficiaries of, that only happened through massive struggles of lots and lots of people. And I'm just so pleased to see young people, because those of us with gray hairs are marking time, you know. But the youth, that's the future. And I would hope that they still have a planet to inherit, because we've done a rotten job. We've allowed the banksters to get away with murdering the planet.
This is KBOO 90.7 in Portland. You're listening to Circle A Radio. Tonight, we're speaking with folks in Detroit, Michigan, participants at the second ever United States Social Forum. The interviews you just heard are from a June 25th protest in front of JP Morgan and Chase.
Got a whole lot of people is losing their homes. You got a whole lot of people's unemployment is ending. And, you know, they trying to get jobs at temporary service and things like that. And a matter of fact, some of them just in trouble, you know what I'm talking about. And we're trying to get people to sign this moratorium, kind of delay and get and extend their unemployment benefits out. Matter of fact, I don't know what... We don't had moratorium before, like when it cut the welfare thing like that. People was getting thrown out, didn't have time to find a place or find a job. The same situation is now. The unemployment is sky high here in Michigan, you know what I mean? And the banks and things is snatching people's mortgages in. And not because these are good working people. They're not responsible for all this mess that the system has started. And but yet, you know what I mean, they don't, some of them is better, they don't fall, but they don't did everything they can to preserve this good old United States of America. Now they're finna pay for it by getting thrown out in the street. You know what I mean? These corporates, they don't send jobs all overseas. Catalog, I think they done moved down in Mexico. And things like that has happened to us. You know what I mean? And the peoples are suffering. Ain't nobody in Chase Bank. I don't think none of them suffer. You know what I'm talking about? And that's the thing. You know what I'm talking about? We built this country. We fought for it. The common people. You know what I'm talking about? And there's one that's suffering. You know, I even summoned on up in your white collar job and went to college and spent hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to go to college and lost their job. Now, there's something wrong with the system, something wrong somewhere to allow something like this to happen. You know what I'm talking about? And just what we protesting against. You know what I mean? And this is a live protest. We talking about, that's a moratorium on, and see if they going to straighten this mess out. But 9 times out of 10, they's not going to even do that. So we got, so it's something going to have to be bigger than this happening. But at the same time, we trying to, you know what I mean, get some types of justice and consideration. You know what I mean? All these people's not marching for their health. And, you know, the average person is a good American citizen, love this country, trying to do best they can, trying to raise the kids, trying to do what's the right thing. You know what I mean? And I know about this because I've been squeezed. I done did a little time in my life, too. You know what I mean? Now I can see a better way to fight the system. Still going out there committing crimes, things like that. But you're going to have people out here just like I was at one time. Now we going to fight, go out and stake somebody up and act crazy because they don't know no better. You know what I mean? And this is what happened. All they know, the kids is hungry. They've been to get thrown out in the street. You know, they going to go and sell it the Hollywood style. Go out there and rob somebody. You know what I mean? We might not had everything we want, but we did have some subsisting money. We could survive and go enjoy a little light pleasure. People can't do that no more. They can't afford to go to the show for a little recreation and get, you know, pressure off their mind. You know what I mean? It's just supper. This is all about supper now.
How does it make you feel to have all these people from around the country and the world come to Detroit, people who are struggling against Chase and against evictions and foreclosures in their own communities?
It makes me feel real good because, you know what I mean, I remember a time when we was kind of both seen and was both told about these things. But I'm proud to see the people, when they struck them, they had enough sense to get up and get out and start doing something. I wish it could happen years ago, and we wouldn't have to go through these changes. But it's wonderful to know that people still is concerned about justice, and we still ain't just going to take anything. And these out here protesting, this is not a bunch of criminals out here protesting. These are good people, concerned people, patriotic people. So don't go and put this on a criminal element. And these, you got educated people out here. You know what I mean? People know more about this system than I know. I got friends out here. One I'm working with now is lawyers. This guy, his name is Matt Banks, his name is Jerry Goldberg. He been fighting this stuff against this injustice for 30-some years that I know, and he don't need no money. So you got good peoples in this world, you know what I mean? And this is who I'm getting behind. You know what I mean? I don't do nothing criminal no more. I don't even think in them terms. I know the right way to fight the system is by doing what's right.
What is your name?
Willie Kirksey.
Okay, Willie, thank you so much for talking with me. My name's Trillium Shannon.
My name is Abayomi Azikwe. I'm an organizer for the Moratorium Now Coalition to stop foreclosures, evictions, and utility shutoffs. I'm based here in the city of Detroit.
Wonderful. So can you talk about what happened here today?
Well, this was a coalition effort on the part of the Moratorium Now Coalition, the Farm Labor Organizing Committee, the Spirituality and Religious Committee of the USSF. The demonstration was endorsed by both the UAW and the Metro AFL-CIO. We're here. We're demanding a moratorium on all foreclosures in the state of Michigan. Plus, we're demanding that Chase Bank negotiates in good faith with the Farm Labor Organizing Committee. Chase Bank bankrolls R.J. Reynolds, which has given a very difficult time to the Farm Labor Organizing Committee. What we're committed to doing is to withdraw all the money from the unions, from the church members, from Chase Bank, until they impose a moratorium, until they give justice to the Farm Labor Organizing Committee.
And can you talk about where the victory was in this demo today?
They've agreed to meet with a delegation of local people here in the city of Detroit, as well as Flock. And if they don't do the right thing by Labor Day, we're going to start pulling the money out, and we're going to continue this campaign to pressurize Chase Bank. We say bail out the people, not the banks.
The U.S. Social Forum is not a protest or a conference. Central to this massive convergence is the process of setting a national agenda from the bottom up. Participants of the U.S. Social Forum seek an authentic democratic process through the National People's Movement Assemblies, or PMAs.
You've taken part in the People's Movement Assembly, at least one of them. Can you talk about what you think about the People's Movement Assemblies that are happening at the U.S. Social Forum?
Well, that was my first People's Movement Assembly, so it was the only experience I had with it. But I felt that it was really important, and it was excellent to get everybody together who's working in these organizations to speak about their struggles and what they're dealing with, and to kind of collaborate on ideas on how to move, you know, move the movement forward. It's been really inspiring to see communities of people coming together to express the difficulties that they're having and, you know, really like work together to build a better world, because right now we're all kind of under the corporate thumb, and it's time to pull that thumb off and let us have our freedoms back.
So my name's John Liss. I'm with the Right to the City, a nationwide alliance. I come out of Virginia. We had a People's Movement Assembly around an urban forum, which is really imagining a different kind of urban life, a right to sustenance, jobs, a right to housing, culture. And we had conversations with people from around the country and sort of develop a platform about what we would like to see and sort of some of the steps we could see towards building a movement to get there.
Can you elaborate on what the importance of having these PMAs is?
I don't come here thinking that we're going to develop detailed plans necessarily, but we're going to sprout some ideas and we're going to develop some networks, some connections, and deepen those and hopefully move us, you know, to another level of organization, struggle, popular resistance, what have you.
Why did you come to the U.S. Social Forum?
Well, I came to see who else is doing work on police ICE collaborations and sort of the conversation that's happening around immigration reform, immigrant rights, and then the enforcement only sort of situation that we have now.
Okay, and have you attended any of the People's Movement assemblies?
I did. I went to the one on immigration reform from the grassroots.
So what is a PMA and why is that important to this process?
I'm not exactly sure I know all the complete answer to that question. My understanding is that, you know, during this time when we have all these people from all over the country coming together, that we should take a moment to use the opportunity to bring us actually together to think about what we want as a people's movement. And so I think the way the people's movements they've been broken up into different groups on specific issues so people can really get to the meat of an issue and start trying to define a movement for us all under one hat, but it seems like it's in a bunch of different ways. So this one was on immigration reform, and it spent some time trying to define what it is that we want. I think a lot of the groups probably spent some time actually critiquing what's happening right now, and then trying to figure out what kinds of actions we could realistically take. So there was a lot, at least in the group I was in, a lot of discussion about the differences between, you know, putting out there what we want and then thinking about what kinds of actions. And there was definitely a lot of critique about immigration reform and the direction that it's been going from the top down and what is it that the people of the grassroots really want.
Next, we'll visit the PMA headquarters in the basement of Cobo Hall to get the scoop on the People's Movement Assemblies.
First of all, introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about yourself and then take us on a tour.
Well, my name is James Brax, and I'm the political education coordinator for Project South, the Institute for Elimination of Genocide and Poverty based in Atlanta. And what we are in the Edgewater Room, which is actually the People's Movement Assembly headquarters. This is where we kind of support and coordinate the assemblies, get out the information to folks, and in particular, we are attempting to document, rigorously document this process so that in the future we can, as a community, as a national community, or better yet, as an emergent national community, we can rigorously reflect on this process, learn from it, refine our strategies of coming together, learning from each other, connecting up with each other so that we can get very powerful, I don't want to say efficient, but very focused in our efforts to connect and move and act together. So in essence, the PMAs represent that desire to organize between forums initially in the context of local struggles, but more importantly, they represent a desire to connect those local struggles up with multiple struggles to insist on an intersectionality between struggles. So if you look at a lot of the people movement assemblies that have occurred, both before and before, over 45 people's movement assemblies have occurred across the country over the past year. So we've had, for example, a queer migrants PMA in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We had a queer people of color PMA in New York, several in New York. We've had people's movement assemblies along the Gulf Coast around a number of issues. One, of course, around the oil spill. And at the forum, over a period of 3 days, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we have what you're looking at here is a chart of the 50 PMAs that are occurring now. To kind of insist on collectivity, each PMA is initially sponsored by and hosted by four grassroots community organizations. But they're not workshops. They're spaces for folks to collectively articulate a shared problem. In a lot of cases, that problem has already been asserted, right? Come up with a shared strategy, a shared vision for how things can be better, and in particular, come together on a set of actions that can bring us closer to those visions. And that's what this process represents. But every PMA, in a lot of ways, represents a social fingerprint. It's highly unique. The process is highly unique. The conversations are unique. The strategy, the facilitation. I mean, you really can't summarize because they're just so radically different from space to space. But there is the overarching commitment is to coming together with shared action across movements. So we have 45 PMAs that occurred before across the country, 50 that are occurring now. And then on Saturday, we have the National People's Movement Assembly, which will essentially reflect back the shared visions and commitments to action that these assemblies came up with. So on Friday, we're going to have a synthesis assembly where representatives for each one of these assemblies will come together with their resolutions, and through pop-ed facilitation and other strategies, we will give folks to encourage and massage the group to articulate the fronts of struggle, the space, the moments where our power is meeting up with neoliberal state power or whatever, right? And for each of these particular, what we're calling fronts, to articulate the general direction that they're going to be moving in within the context of that particular front of struggle. And so it's going to be, and this is Friday, so this is going to be, so the synthesis is going to be a really important process. This is all an experiment. We're just kind of learning as we go, and we're going to learn a lot tonight. I'm really excited because we have a lot of really talented, battle-tested facilitators that are in the grassroots doing critical work, know how to work with folks, going to work with the group. Then we have a synthesis commission, which will be observing the process, and it's composed of elders whom we respect and honor that have been in movement for decades, and from within indigenous communities, black radical feminist communities, from anti-racist, ecological justice, you name it, from different sectors, that will be observing the process and kind of will articulate the general themes into a declaration that will be shared at the assembly. We're not going to read the resolutions. That will all be online on PMA2010.org, where folks can go online and pull up the profiles of each of the PMAs, the resolutions, the anchor organizations, the thematic tracks that particular PMA sees itself in the context of. And but at the assembly, we will simply be affirming what we just went through, looking at ourselves, who we are, and getting a sense of what we can do together, and insisting on that other world possible can only come if we move together, if we connect and not allow ourselves to be divided. That doesn't mean that we don't have differences, right, and that we don't have specific issues and communities around, but that food justice is intimately connected to prison abolition, is intimately connected to the war on drugs, right? And so there is, and it's important that we create a process that allows us to see those intersections and develop focused actions and strategies that allow us to, you know, to carve out the wins that we need to assert the dignity that's necessary for us to live. The reality is that we're at literally in a battle for our lives. And I think the BP oil spill illustrates that fact well. The largest, most devastating marine catastrophe in American history is occurring off the coast here, and it's devastating, and it's going to annihilate a whole cultures that lived off of that area. So anyway, yeah. So this is the PMA.
Can you speak to where the process, how it was derived? You said it's experimental, but are there movements that were the inspiration for this particular process?
Definitely. This is a peculiar process to us here in the U.S. We're not used to this. However, folks in the Global South have been organizing through assembly processes for decades. So we definitely draw from that history. And the organizers, some of the folks that have insisted on this, like folks with Southwest Workers Union, Ruben Solis, and folks over at Project South, Stephanie Gilliard, all look to the Global South and the U.S. South for inspiration around these assemblies. I mean, there's the Zapatistas, for example, and the Encuentros that were held in 94, 95, 96, or actually through, they're still occurring now, were critical convergence spaces that played a part in inspiring, bringing folks together, a lot of whom played a role in WT in Seattle.
And what do you see as the possibilities and the vision for the future with this process?
We need something new. You know, I think one of the things that people across the board agree is that what has been done before isn't working now. And now that we've come down from the high of the Obama presidency, we're realizing that while faced with extraordinary, you know, conditions and a government that was in total crisis, that the Obama administration is reverting back to the same old strategies and methods that marked previous administrations. And so something new is needed. And I think that the PMA process asserts that creativity, that brilliance exists in the community. It exists at the grassroots. And until we come to a place where we not only insist on it, but figure out a way to draw on that and to connect that up with each other, and create deep learning communities where we can learn from each other's struggles, from each other's victories and defeats, right? And see our struggles in each other. I think that then we can become a very powerful, unstoppable force here in the U.S., the belly of the beast, right? And I think that's what has to happen to, you know, the cartel and the carnage that our country is inflicting on the world, on the Global South. But I think we can do it if we figure out a way to come together, figure out a way to see each other, to talk to each other, listen to each other. This is the beginning of that. And I think some of the assemblies, we're going to learn that we don't really know how to listen to each other and that we got to figure that out. That's going to be a really big point that's going to come out. You know, I think we could sum up, you know, race, class, gender in the context of listening and saying that, you know, that somehow it, you know, those categories make it difficult for folks to listen, to hear, right, to engage and encounter people, to see folks where they're really at and to see the brilliance that they represent. No, I mean, this is just an exciting process. This is an experiment. This is something that we're learning as we're going. I'm confident that if we commit to the process, to learning and to sharing and to being creative, that there ain't nothing we won't be able to do. So it's just a matter of, you know, just digging in.
That was James Braggs of Project South. Thanks to him and all the wonderful organizers, activists, and visionaries who participated in tonight's show and the United States Social Forum. Circle A Radio comes to you each first and third Wednesday of the month on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. You can also listen online at kbu.fm from 6 till 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. For archived audio, visit kboo.fm/circlearadio. Our next show is Wednesday, August 4th. Thanks for listening.
And the other thing I would recommend is to be with children, be with the babies, sit down with them. They have the real essence of how we ought to live, to look at and to admire and appreciate beauty, to be in this momentness, to have a sense of deep down sense of okayness with the world and with everyone else. Their enthusiasm for the sun rising. I remember my daughter once, when she was just a baby, she in the crib, she noticed her hand and she stared at it. Then all of a sudden she said, wow, there's another one. But completely absorbed in a peak experience. I think that is what living really is. And being with babies, they have that down. And because it is to be in hot pursuit of truth.
Every step that you take, make sure you're a teacher. Never stop teaching. Always give an encouraging word. Take an encouraging step to make someone's life better. If it's nothing more than to say good morning. And if you have to make a correction, do it right then and there, but do it with love and compassion. I love Detroit.